Good afternoon, and welcome to this news conference sponsored by the Investor Protection Trust and Investor Protection Institute. You'll be hearing from three speakers today. Before we introduce them as a group and then individually, I want to invite the operator on the line to explain how the Q&A period will work.
Yes, ma'am. During the question and answer session, you may ask a question by pressing star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. If you'd like to remove yourself from the queue, you may press star, then 2. Again, it is star then 1 to ask a question.
Thank you, and we will invite the operator back on the line at the start of the Q&A period to repeat those instructions about how members of the news media can pose questions. As I mentioned, you'll be hearing from three speakers today: Don Blandon, President and CEO of the Investor Protection Trust; Irving Fought, Administrator of the Oklahoma Securities Commission; Mark Lax, MD and MPH, Pasady Distinguished Professor of Medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College, Director of Geriatrics with the New York Presbyterian Healthcare System, and Director of the New York City Elder Abuse Center. Let's begin with our first speaker, Don Blandon, President and CEO of the Investor Protection Trust.
Good day, and welcome to this news event sponsored by the Nonprofit Investor Protection Trust, IPT, and the Investor Protection Institute. We're here today to unveil the findings of a survey of 756 experts in response to a request for information from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, a federal government agency, regarding financial exploitation of older Americans and best practices for elder financial management. The online poll was responded to by a diverse group, including state securities regulators, financial planners, healthcare professionals, social workers, adult protective services professionals, law enforcement officials, elder law attorneys, financial educators, and others. And on the line, we have two experts, which I'm anxious to get to after I describe to you the results of the survey, Oklahoma Securities Administrator Irving Fought and Dr. Mark Lax, who will be introduced later. The online poll found that about two-thirds, 65% of those surveyed deal with elderly victims of investor fraud or financial exploitation. Three out of four experts said that such swindles are a very serious problem in America today, and an even greater number, 78%, said older Americans are very vulnerable to financial exploitation. The survey also found that most seniors do not have the information they need to pick a financial advisor to help them protect their savings. Here are some of the key findings. First, regarding the most common abuses that seniors face, the three top financial exploitation problems identified by the experts in our poll are: 1, theft or diversion of funds or property by family members, 79%, theft or diversion of funds or property by caregivers, 49%, and 3, financial scams perpetuated by strangers, 47%. And of those of you who follow this particular area, you know that some of those financial scams by strangers can be ones that actually deplete the entire life savings of a senior at the worst possible times in their lives. Second, we asked the question, what works to help curb the problem? As for the financial education, counseling, or personal finance management programs, best tailored to the unique financial needs of older Americans and their families or caregivers, the experts identified the following three items: programs delivered by local professionals, such as caregivers, trained caregivers, adult protective services workers, law enforcement agencies, and healthcare professionals. That came in at 71%. Second was programs delivered through senior centers and other facilities catering to older Americans at 65%. And then third, programs delivered by senior-oriented national and local organizations, 55%. Third, we asked, do seniors have the right information? Over half, 53%, said that the available resources for seniors when selecting a financial advisor with appropriate knowledge to address their specific financial needs are either not very effective or not effective at all. Under a third, 30%, said that the resources are somewhat effective or very effective. Those are some of the key findings. However, I'd also like to mention the following conclusions. Nearly 3 in 5, 58%, said seniors are not very able or not able at all to determine the legitimacy, value, and authenticity of credentials held by their financial advisors and planners. By a margin of 36% to 26%, that's again by a margin of 36% to 26%, the experts said that current efforts for maintaining the legitimacy, value, and authenticity of credentials held by financial advisors and planners are not very effective or not effective at all. About 6 in 10, 59%, think existing accountability controls are not effective when it comes to deterring the misuse of senior advisor credentials. And perhaps Irving Fott can talk a little bit about that issue a little later. Planners or so-called planners who are using or say they have the senior advisor credentials, because that has been a big topic of discussion among the state securities regulators. I encourage you to go to the IPT website. That's at www.investorprotection.org for the full survey findings. In conclusion, our new survey shows that financial swindles targeting older Americans are a bigger problem today than ever before, and that seniors need more help. That's why the Investor Protection Trust's Elder Investment Fraud and Financial Exploitation Prevention Program has already trained more than 3,000 U.S. medical professionals who deal every day with older Americans to spot the impaired mental capacity that can leave some seniors vulnerable to financial abuse. It is encouraging that we are seeing more security regulators collaborating with healthcare practitioners, adult protective services professionals, and others to help curb this national crisis. 7 out of 10 survey respondents agree that this type of collaborative, community-based program is an effective means to combat financial abuse before the damage is done. And of course, there is no silver bullet that will end financial abuse of America's seniors. Putting a major dent in the problem will require new and innovative collaborative efforts by many different experts and organizations, both public and private. Our survey makes it clear that those efforts need to take root all across America and then link up with other groups and their programs in order to reduce the attack on the investment and life savings of older Americans. I'd like to now turn it back to our organizer.
Thank you very much. Again, that was Don Blandon, President and CEO of the Investor Protection Trust. Let's proceed now to our second speaker, Irving Fott, Administrator of the Oklahoma Securities Commission.
Thank you. We deal every day with elderly victims of financial fraud and abuse. And we're talking about many Oklahomans or many Americans. Often the results are tragic and shocking stories. As Don indicated, I have been asked to address the Investor Protection Trust's Elder Investment Fraud and Financial Exploitation Prevention Program, as well as to give a state-specific perspective. Oklahoma is an active participant in this program. We work directly with the University of Oklahoma College of Medicine, the Department of Geriatric Medicine, and those responsible for continuing medical education. The EFI program began as a pilot project in Texas that was supported by the IPT. About 2 years ago, the IPT released the results of another national survey that was released to mark World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. That survey gauged the knowledge and behavior of senior investors aged 65 and over, as well as the views of adult children with at least one parent aged 65 and over. The survey revealed 7.3 million older Americans, one out of every five over the age of 65, had already been victimized by a financial swindle. The survey also revealed that many adult children are worried about their elderly parents' ability to handle their finances. The 2010 survey results underscored the urgent need for the EFI project. Between IPT, the North American Securities Administrators Association, the National Adult Protective Services Association, and leading U.S. medical associations. The Investor Protection Trust launched the National EFI program in 2010 based on those prior programs, particularly the one from the Huffington Center on Aging at the Baylor College of Medicine and the Texas Consortium Geriatric Educational Center. Based on the results of the Texas pilot project, IPT secured the participation of state securities offices in a total of now 28 states and jurisdictions to form a coalition to implement the National EFI Prevention Program. Here's how it works. The program educates medical professionals to recognize when their older patients are vulnerable to or victims of investment fraud and financial exploitation, and then to report it to adult protective services professionals and state securities regulators. You will be hearing more about the underlying medical issue of mild cognitive impairment from our next speaker. But for now, I want to emphasize that there are some good signs in these findings that we are on the right track in tackling financial swindlers that go after older Americans. The survey results show that our training and outreach programs, like the EFI Prevention Program, are a good way to identify and reach victims and potential victims of elder financial abuse. Healthcare professionals, just a minute, I got a couple other things here. Healthcare professionals, social workers, and caregivers are important to this process. We all need to come together to fight this battle. My experience in investor education is that the elderly population is very difficult to reach compared to other populations such as adult workers, pre-retirees, and even high school students. And once we reach them, the efforts may not stick. Acting alone, we may not be effective, but acting together, we may reach and succeed in the results we are trying to obtain. Thank you. That concludes my formal remarks.
Thank you very much. Again, that was Irving Fott, Administrator of the Oklahoma Securities Commission. Let's proceed now to our third and final speaker making brief opening comments, Mark Lax, MD and MPH, Pasady Distinguished Professor of Medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College, Director of Geriatrics with the New York Presbyterian Healthcare System, and Director of the New York City Elder Abuse Center.
Thank you. So I'd like to put a clinical face on today's remarks as someone who is both a primary care physician to older adults and has seen the devastation of all forms of elder abuse, particularly financial exploitation. And as a researcher who's worked in this field for over 25 years, I care for many older adults with various degrees of excellent cognition to impaired cognition, which renders them vulnerable. And I'd like to emphasize that this is a public health problem. In the past year, we've completed a study in New York State in which we interviewed 4,000 older adults, and fully over 7% of them experienced some form of elder abuse in the past year. The most common form of mistreatment was financial exploitation. Over half of those cases in the past year alone involved financial exploitation. We also know that elder abuse and neglect in all its forms, including financial exploitation, is morbid and mortal. Victims of elder mistreatment, including financial exploitation, have a threefold risk of death compared to non-abused counterparts. So again, a 300% increased risk of death in the 3 years following an episode of abuse, neglect, or financial exploitation. So it's just a huge problem. I'd also remind listeners that in this election year, when entitlements are under profound scrutiny and discussion, that elder abuse, neglect, and financial exploitation victims become expensive to our entitlement systems. For example, we know that victims of elder mistreatment and particularly financial exploitation are at increased risk of entering a nursing home. And who's the major player for nursing home care? It is Medicaid. And that is a system that is weighing on virtually every state's budget. So older adults who are financially exploited, in addition to enduring personal indignity, also weigh heavily on our system of public entitlements at a time when those are very much strained. I very much like the fact that the findings of this survey point to collaborative efforts. You know, I look at child abuse, and I see the multidisciplinary efforts that have been created to protect children. It's insane to think that a pediatrician alone, without the help of a social worker, law enforcement, schools, a variety of players could assist a vulnerable child. In the same way, I think that victims of financial exploitation need that same kind of collaborative effort. I think the efforts of IPT to educate physicians to preemptively identify older adults who are at risk for financial exploitation is a superb one. In New York, we have a multidisciplinary elder abuse center that makes financial exploitation a major priority since it is the most common form of elder mistreatment that we see. And I'm glad that this very important public health issue is receiving the proper attention it deserves, particularly as financial professionals, healthcare workers, and others stand shoulder to shoulder to protect the rights of the greatest generation. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, that was the opening statement of Mark Lax, MD and MPH, Basady Distinguished Professor of Medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College, Director of Geriatrics of the New York Presbyterian Healthcare System, and Director of the New York City Elder Abuse Center. That takes us now to the Q&A portion of the call. I'd like to invite the operator back on the line to explain once again how the Q&A period will work.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star, then 2 to remove yourself from the list. We please ask that you limit yourself to one question and a single follow-up. If you need to ask an additional question, please know that you may press star, then 1 to rejoin the queue.
Thank you, and while we're waiting for questions to queue up, I'd like to emphasize that the Q&A period is for reporters only. You can find the survey report and related news release on the web at www.investorprotection.org. Again, that's www.investorprotection.org. Operator, let's proceed to our first question.
Yes, ma'am. First question comes from Liz Skinner, Investment News.
Thanks very much. I wondered, the research that you guys did seems to suggest that seniors are unable to pick out a financial advisor that they can trust. I was wondering what type of solutions have been brought up to help seniors find advisors who are legitimate and can help them with their finances, and is there anything that CFPB is looking at doing?
Let me, this is Don Blandon. I'll start with that and ask my colleagues to jump in if they'd like. We have been working with a lot of other nonprofit organizations, such as the Financial Planning Association, the CFP Board of Standards, which is the Certified Financial Planner Organization, and other nonprofits, to get better materials and more active and aggressive marketing of that information on how to find someone who you can trust with advice for financial matters. And we're trying to, again, build out this coalition involving a number of other organizations which have the expertise and members who are actually practicing, financial planners, certified financial planners, CFP practitioners, for example. And that has been growing, and we have a call, in fact, just after this call, with a consumer advisory group of others who are giving advice on how to reach seniors. I'm going to share with them the results of our survey. I think the message was clear, is that you have to be, and Irving Fott mentioned it, you have to be aggressive in meeting with seniors where they are and where they feel safe, which in many cases is right there in your community. And you have to train people to be able to work with seniors and not only just work with them on a one-time basis, but be available with them for many months after that to make sure that the knowledge that they gained from the education session is actually applied in a good way going forward with respect to what we call the basics of saving and investing, where we try to get people to become wise and safe investors. Wise is that they understand the process of investing, difference between stocks and bonds, for example, and also safe in that they understand the risks that are out there through things like Ponzi schemes and affinity scams. So what we're trying to do is work very aggressively on a public-private, intergovernmental, interdisciplinary type coalition building of experts who can be available to us, give some of their time, pay it forward, give back to community, and go in and run some programs. One of our most successful programs was in libraries, which we started with the Boston Public Library, where we ran a four-part series of three-hour seminars and breakout groups called How Can I Afford Retirement for People Over 50, which ran through several major topics that seniors need to know, why we save and invest, how financial markets work, as we learned in the last few years, sometimes don't work, how to find a financial planner, how to check out a broker, et cetera, and then, of course, how to avoid scams and frauds. So we have a lot of models, videos, materials, et cetera, on our website that we let people use in non-commercial, unbiased investor education, financial education settings.
Don, can I jump in there to add a couple of a different perspective there? There are two different questions involved in this. One is the absolute fraud guy who comes in with the alphabet soup card, and it doesn't make any difference what a listing of specific legitimate planners or advisors may be. That guy is going to get to the victim no matter what. We had an example of where a guy was actually invited to speak at a nursing home, came and spoke, and then was given free rein to go up and down the halls and go in people's rooms. One of the children of a lady who was in there discovered this fellow's card printed laying on the table next to her when she's in assisted living. He had come to her to try to get investment money from her, and she was sold by him. The child then reported it to us, and we discovered that the card was not legitimate, neither was the approach, and we were able to intervene. But that's just the example of a fraud guy. What about the legitimate guy with the right card, with the right initials, who doesn't know what he's doing? And we attempt to get to that by educating through our national associations and material that's out there, people about products that they may be selling so that they are fully informed that a product may not be suitable. For example, if there's an early withdrawal payment for an elderly person, they need to know. The legitimate and good guys also need to be trained.
Thank you. Operator, let's proceed to our next question.
Yes, the next question comes from Gail Marks Jarvis of the Chicago Tribune.
Hi, this relates to the last discussion. So you're talking about financial planners, but a lot of these people, such as the example of the individual in the nursing home, maybe down to a few a very little money that wouldn't interest a regular financial planner. So I'm wondering what you have envisioned for people that can help individuals that would not have, say, $250,000 in investable assets and interest a financial planner.
There are a number of other nonprofits that we work with, like Communities Against Senior Exploitation case in different states, where they have nonprofit basically companions, other seniors who can go and check and work with those seniors who are either maybe isolated in their own home or in an assisted living facility with their financial needs. The Consumer Protection Bureau, Financial Protection Bureau, is looking at all of that wide range of older Americans at every socioeconomic level to figure out how to help different groups with different interventions to keep them safe when it comes to their financial management needs. I agree with you that we're not just talking about seniors who have large sums of money, which are targeted by higher end, basically criminals, or seniors who, since they control about 70% of the disposable income in this country as a group, but many of them have higher levels of needs for management, and this financial planners are, some of them are attempting to help them, and some seniors don't have enough to actually engage a financial planner, but they still need help with activities of daily living, ADLs, in managing their money on a day-to-day basis. So we're looking for different kinds of organizations and nonprofits to help intervene in that way.
I think also, Don, that the education program through the EFI program helps here in medical providers, and if we drift on down to even nursing home people who will understand that you can't come in and pool a group of people's Social Security checks, or you can't just to interest, that financial planner who has the low-end aspect of it. So I think an answer to that problem is educating the providers that give services to the elderly, and I think the EFI program can develop into that helpful solution.
Go ahead, Mark.
Don, it's Mark. Yeah, I'd like to echo that. I think that if someone is swindled out of $50,000 and they have a multi-million dollar nest egg, that's bad. But someone for whom the entire nest egg is $50,000 or $100,000, perhaps a civil servant or a retired teacher, that's devastating, because then again you become a Medicaid recipient. I think that's why the EFI program, the training of physicians, is critical. And what I love about that is physicians being on the lookout both preemptively and for something that's amiss. So, medications are not being refilled because of certain costs, or visits are being missed, or certain medical supplies are not being purchased because resources are not available. Physicians might, without your program, ascribe that to sort of non-compliance, when in fact it could be you've been wiped out. So I think physician education is critical. The annual physical that a primary care doctor has with an older person may be the only interaction that victim has with someone outside of the abuser-victim dyad. And older adults are isolated. They lose friends, and their social networks shrink. It's critical. I think also community agencies, as you pointed out, are critical. Many communities, and we do this in our environment in New York at the Elder Abuse Center, is we train bank tellers, for example, to determine if a withdrawal is being made in a way that's under duress or someone unknown accompanies someone to the bank. So for people with more modest assets, I mean, I think we need to be looking in places other than, the big financial accounts, and there, this runs the spectrum, and it's devastating at every level.
Thank you. Operator, let's proceed to our next question.
Next is Josephine Gittler, the College of Law, University of Iowa.
Dr. Lass, this is a question for Dr. Lass. In terms of your education for physicians, are you actually giving them education about how to screen and, more to the point, how to assess older individuals for diminished financial capacity using validated instruments, or is it more teaching them the warning signs to identify a person who is, in fact, already being financially exploited by
Excellent question. Now, you know, you're sort of speaking to the choir here. I'm a geriatrician who runs a modest geriatric medical practice at a fine institution where we're trained to look for cognitive impairment and screen for cognitive impairment and be on the lookout for all forms of elder mistreatment. The problem is that the vast majority of primary care to older adults in this country is not provided for by geriatricians. There are only about 5,000 of us, and the numbers actually may be dropping, for large numbers of older people, you know, tens of millions of boomers and beyond. And that's where Don's program comes in. Don, do you want to sort of talk a little bit about the detail?
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, Don is really, his program has been really reaching out to physicians beyond geriatricians, really the primary care physicians in big and small communities, providing useful information around when an older adult might be vulnerable and how to alert the patient and or family. I mean, we're not talking necessarily about patients who have advanced dementia or Alzheimer's disease. This state of minimal cognitive impairment, which in some cases progresses to Alzheimer's disease, but in many cases just reflects minor impairments in cognition and judgment, are very common. And physicians generally, I'm sad to say, have not been well-trained to care for older adults generally. I'm not proud of that. There's a tremendous shortage of knowledge around the care of older adults, but specifically around issues of financial vulnerability, and that's where the EFI program and the kinds of training that has gone on at Baylor and Oklahoma and beyond has really helped.
Got to build on that, Mark. We here went to the annual physicians update, not just geriatrics, and had a good turnout and presented as a part of that educational program, the EFI program.
Thank you. Operator, do we have any additional questions at this time?
No, ma'am. We're showing no further questions at this time.
Okay. I know there are many reporters on the line. Let's go ahead and go through the instructions one more time about how folks can ask questions.
Yes, ma'am. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star, then one on a touchtone phone. Again, that is star, then one to ask a question.
Okay, and we'll wait a few minutes to see if anybody would like to chime in with additional questions. I'd like to stress again, you can find the full survey report and related news release as well as background information on the EFI program at www.investorprotection.org. And that is also where a streaming audio replay of this news event will be available as of 5 p.m. Eastern Time today. Operator, do we have additional questions?
Yes, ma'am. It looks like we have a follow-up from Gail Marks Jarvis, the Chicago Tribune.
Hi. Thanks for taking this follow-up. So I'm listening to you, and you're talking about, you know, major scams and whatnot, but I've been a financial columnist now for more than 12 years, and I get calls constantly from seniors worried about their money. And what I hear constantly are not major scams that you would call major scams, not Madoff-type things, although we know now that Madoff-type things occur. But what I hear are just people being put into unsuitable products constantly, where there could be a debate about whether it was suitable or not, if you want to get really legalistic. But anyone looking at it on its face would know that it wasn't suitable. For example, people being put into annuity products that the broker doesn't really understand and the individual gets stuck in and can't get out without losing large sums of money. Are you looking at any products and how they're sold and doing anything about just the regular day-to-day with people being put in unsuitable products?
Irving, do you want to
take let me give you an example, a recent example. This is an example that I was using also to say that we wanted to repetition reporting and remediation of the kind of investor education materials we have to show sometimes you can advise a senior individually and it won't stick. But it goes to what your question is about these day-to-day things. This was an elderly victim who got a cold call in these economic times to provide money for a gold investment. Just an individual. He invested some $20,000 but received no paperwork or no reports. His family and the investor contacted the department and notified us of the investment, and notified us also that he could not get calls returned and that the line had been disconnected. We gave him several advice aspects. We took an action, a cease and desist order against this was not an in-state cold call. But then after we had done that work, the investor within a week went back and put money back into the investment. We get stories like that all the time, and I'd say most of the time on our cop on the beat level, it is an individual case. It is someone scamming somebody out of $10,000. Like I said about sometimes at the nursing homes, they'll go in and try to pool people's checks that come in to invest them. So we are addressing that through education to the victims potentially, but also seeing that the providers of some of these products, annuities, gold investments that just aren't flat suitable, although maybe not fraudulent, that they understand that they face serious legal consequences for those kind of ignorant errors.
Now, are you taking in any position on the a controversial issue of whether people should be fiduciaries or not?
Not in this call, I'm not.
Are you outside of this call?
No, I'm on this call, but I'd like to see how that develops. I think fiduciary responsibility is very important. The advisors have it, and the brokers probably need it too.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and
you.
other professions that I don't regulate is what I meant by that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Operator, let's proceed to our next question.
The next question comes from Mary Beth Franklin, Investment News.
Hi, thank you. There's been so much research and emphasis lately on behavioral finance, why people do certain things the way they do with their money, and the overlap of cognitive impairment, particularly with finances as people get older. Do you foresee any sort of guidelines that might be available to financial advisors to recognize these signs? And really, whose responsibility is it? Is it the financial advisor who thinks maybe this client isn't as sharp as he or she used to be? Or do they mention it to their family? Or does the doctor get involved? How do we proceed with this aging population who will be investing?
Well,
go ahead, Irving.
It's Mark, actually. It's Mark Lack.
Mark, sorry,
I'll start, and this is just such a spot-on question. I mean, the issue of how the brain changes with aging, and particularly around the issue of judgment and financial decisions, is one of enormous interest. And the kinds of guidelines that you're talking about are not going to happen in the next 6 months or a year, but they're going to happen. We're beginning to see functional imaging, you know, these scans of the brain while people are actively engaged in trying to make decisions. We found, for example, that older adults, when given many choices. So, you know, they get the diner menu of investment choices as opposed to the blue plate special, if you will. Do much better with a limited series of options as opposed to complexity. And when presented with data in a more age-appropriate way, they make much better decisions. I think you will see a day when financial information is going to have to be tailored to what is largely an older audience. As for who should be responsible, I think, you know, we all bear responsibility. You know, if we see it, you know, in the same way, if I saw a patient who was profoundly cognitively impaired and driving, and I had concerns, and I did not speak to that family or, in the most severe case, report them to motor vehicles, I would find myself in court, you know, if that person struck a child the next month. So I think there's a growing awareness among physicians, particularly among geriatricians, that we have an important role here. And I think financial professionals, and I'll stick my neck out here, really need to be put on notice that that they really have the same sorts of, I'll call them fiduciary responsibilities, whether that's a matter of policy or ultimately law. Don, I think, or Irving, you wanted to say something.
This is Don Blandon. I just wanted to say that in the last four annual meetings of the financial planners that I have attended, the number of sessions related to dealing with clients, as they call them usually, who have diminished capacity in decision making, like mild cognitive impairment, has grown substantially and significantly at those events where you're bringing people together to be educated, in this case, to financial planners, of current challenges in their particular workplace, in their particular profession, to the point where in two cases they had at the last minute had to move to another room because they couldn't accommodate all the people who wanted to attend that session. So I know it's on the radar scope of the financial planners and their nonprofit educational associations as well. And the last question from the last speaker who asked it, I think, well knows too that people need more education about how to handle Social Security. Even those who are days away from claiming it, there are lots of different options for seniors related to Social Security. And some of them are going to yield a much better long-term result because the good news is because of medical advances and healthy lifestyles and other reasons, we're living longer. The bad news is, are we going to really be able to afford it or are we going to have a problem? So we want to make sure that people can manage their money for a lifetime properly and with expert help. And with caring help and people who are doing the right thing in advising them appropriately.
This is Mary Beth Franklin again. May I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
Given the fact that one of the biggest expenses in retirement for most people is health care, and the fact that we are seeing diminished capabilities at older ages, is it reasonable to assume that seniors should be put in a position where they have to make very complicated decisions about Medicare choices, which might happen if we go to a voucher system? Anybody can
Mark,
take that?
Mark, you want to address that?
Well, thanks for that softball.
Yeah.
I think capacity... the attorneys tend to look at capacity as yes or no. We in healthcare tend to look at capacity as very much on a spectrum. So when I have patients who need to make healthcare decisions who have limited capacity, it depends on the complexity of the decision. You may have capacity to effectively say, I do or do not want life-sustaining treatment in the event that I have a cardiac arrest, for example. That requires not a whole lot of capacity. People have, with modest degree of impairment can speak to that. They can articulate their preferences. few weeks ago, I was explaining to a patient with lung cancer the different treatment options, you know, chemotherapy versus radiation versus surgery versus watching, and each of these decision trees had five branches with percentages. And so that kind of decision effectively requires much more capacity. I think it will be problematic, given the fact that you can detect some form of cognitive impairment in up to 40% of people after the age of 85, some very minor, some very significant. And if we're going to put large if we're going to give large numbers of potential Medicare recipients very complex choices around how to manage those finite expenses, it's going to be problematic for a significant percentage of that population.
Thank you.
Thank you, operator. Do we have any additional questions at this time?
No, ma'am. We have no further questions at this time.
Okay. At this point, I'd like to go back through our list of speakers that you've heard from and give them an opportunity to offer any closing thoughts that they may have. Don Blandon, President and CEO of the Investor Protection Trust.
I just would like to thank Irving Fott in Oklahoma, who is also an Investor Protection Trust trustee and has been for a long time, and the other state security regulators who have all come together in a rather large coalition to see if we can work with other organizations and help in any way we can seniors with the risks that they face as they age, and particularly related to their lifetime savings. And Irving in Oklahoma and other states in Oklahoma and in security regulators in other states are doing state-by-state upfront and personal events with seniors in their respective states. So that's how we kind of do the coalitions. We have one state piloted, you heard earlier, it was Texas, and then we offer it to other states, and we were looking at 20 to get started, and we ended up with 28, and we believe that other states will be coming in an effort to interact with healthcare professionals all over the country on these issues. And then I also would like to thank Mark Lax. Mark and I attended a White House conference in June on elder financial exploitation, which brought together many public and private sector leaders. Mark was on the program, a very eloquent speaker on this subject, as you've just heard, and we look forward to working with Mark and his colleagues as well as we broaden the coalition and reach as many seniors as we possibly can before any damage is done related to their finances. So we're going to be doing it over and over and over again, and I want to thank everyone who was on this call for your interest.
Thank you. Irving Fott, Administrator of the Oklahoma Securities Commission.
I think this program gives us a great opportunity to make people aware of financial fraud across the spectrum. And I am encouraged by the facts of the program that bring people together. We find a broad coalition from the medical field, the insurance and banking field, and county agencies, including law enforcement people, that have gotten together that may never have gotten together before on any of these issues. But now we have an opportunity, a serious common enemy, to come together and pull together. And I see this program as really helping State Securities Administration, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. And finally, Mark Lax, MD and MPH, Pasady Distinguished Professor of Medicine at Weill Cornell Medical College.
I'd like to make two closing points, one I haven't made before and one I have. The first has to do with how this affects everyone in society, even if you don't have an older person in your life. And this goes for individuals of significant resources. You know, many times I get involved in a case when I'm called by the Charities Bureau of a state or by a not-for-profit that was to be the recipient of a gift that wound up in the hands of an unscrupulous financial planner or a scammer. I guess the Burke Astor case in New York is a great example of that. Many of these resources that are being pillaged were to be left to our churches, our synagogues, our boys' clubs, our parks, our institutions, our museums. So that's a way in which elder financial exploitation, to a very large degree, and I've seen a number of these cases for people of significant means, affects all of us. So I'd ask the reporters to think about that. I suspect you've seen some of those in your orbits. And then lastly, I'll make the point again that this is a public health problem. Victims of elder financial exploitation become sick, and they become expensively sick, and they occupy nursing homes, and they strain our entitlement programs. So in addition to this enormous personal indignity and suffering and sadness and shame that this produces, God knows I've seen so many victims who are so ashamed that they could fall for this. It is an expensive problem to society. Guys, we can do better for older people. We owe it to them. We will be them. And I'm indebted to my colleagues and to IPT for really shining a bright light on this.
Thank you. Again, that was Mark Lax at Weill Cornell Medical College. I want to make sure that you know, again, where to get more information about today's news event. To connect with any of the speakers you've heard from today and get more information, you can contact Elise Wolf at 703-276-3265. As I mentioned before, you can get the survey report, news release, and related information on this topic on the web at www.investorprotection.org. And that's also where a streaming audio replay of this news event will be later today. Again, you've been listening to a news conference sponsored by the Investor Protection Trust and Investor Protection Institute. Thank you for joining us. That concludes today's news event.